And from the KTOO newsroom in Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumry. Last winter, controversy erupted over a basketball game between Ketchikan High School and nearby rival Metlakatla. Students dressed in cowboy hats, flannel shirts, and boots for what Ketchikan's pep club band planned as a country-themed night. Some students shouted racial slurs, according to investigators. Indigenous fans from both communities took this theme as an offensive reference to old tropes of cowboys and Indians, as the Ketchikan team hosted players from Alaska's only reservation. Ketchikan School District has since apologized and pledged to do better in the future. And just recently, Ketchikan School Board made the trip to Metlakatla to address the rift the incident left between the two communities. As KRBD's Reagan Miller reports, the meeting is in the process of what Metlakatla officials say is a necessary healing process.
It wasn't just about a basketball game or a theme.
Me personally, I've seen that it was evident in both communities that there is a deep wound.
That's Gatgita Hike, the president of Metlakatla School Board, speaking on her own behalf about the damage caused by a country night pep club theme.
In order for the healing to begin, it's something that needs to be talked about amongst everyone, including leaders in the community.
That's what happened on Martin Luther King Jr. Day, when a handful of members from Ketchikan School Board made the trip to Metlakatla. There was just one item on the agenda, to discuss the deeper problems exposed by that basketball game last winter. Hike says the time was dedicated to exploring ways that the two towns can keep finding ways to bring their students together.
I think that everyone is looking forward to moving forward and developing a good relationship.
Stephen Bradford is the president of Ketchikan School Board. He says officials in both communities agree that it's time to build a closer relationship.
We realized that there had never been a joint meeting of the two school districts that anyone could remember anyway. And we just felt like it was a very productive session just because they are so close and we are so intertwined.
Bradford says the two boards also discussed some recent basketball games between the Ketchikan Kings and the Metlakatla Chiefs. He says both boards agree that the atmosphere has been positive at tournament and regular season games.
And I think the same feeling was expressed about the Clark Cochran, because the Metlakatla Miss Chiefs had participated in that tournament, and everything was a great atmosphere and a lot of fun for the kids.
Tom Hewitt, a Ketchikan School Board member, says the meeting was a reminder of just how closely connected the two towns are.
We have a lot more in common than we do that separates us.
Hewitt says he'd like to continue to forge closer ties with Metlakatla's district.
So I think what I got out of it was Ketchikan and Metlakatla are very closely connected, almost, you know, one larger community, because a lot of folks from there come over here, vice versa, very closely linked. And our two school districts are both facing a lot of the same challenges.
School board member Diane Gubatayo also made the trip over. She describes the meeting as a chance to show appreciation to Metlakatla. Bradford brought gifts to Metlakatla's board, including a few framed pictures and a wooden art piece commemorating Alaska Native civil rights leader Elizabeth Pratchervich, created by Ketchikan students. Metlakatla's board members took them on a tour of Metlakatla High School and the new vocational technical buildings, including an inside look at the school's scuba certification program. Gubatayo says she was grateful for the opportunity.
I think it was a very important event for one board to honor another and to build relationships with another as board members to board members. And we all acknowledge that the most important thing in our efforts and discussion, it's all about the students and what's best for our students.
And Bradford agreed, at the end of the day, it's not about basketball. It's about the students.
And you could tell that there's great friendship and camaraderie between the players themselves. Sometimes it's the adults who get in the way.
He says the two boards are ready to move forward together. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Reagan Miller.
And there are many unanswered questions about the fatal polar bear attack in Wales Tuesday, all pointing to the biggest question of all: why did it happen? As the community grieves the loss of two residents, researchers and officials are delicately trying to learn more. That includes Jeff York, the senior director of the conservation at Polar Bears International. As York told Alaska Public Media's Casey Grove, polar bear attacks are extremely rare. The last fatal mauling in Alaska was more than three decades ago, but the big white bears are not an uncommon sight in Wales.
First reaction was absolute sadness. I've been to Wales. I've worked with people in Wales. It's a fantastic community, a strong community. And yeah, my heart goes out to all those involved and friends and family across the region, I'm sure, who are still trying to, you know, understand what happened. Like you said, these attacks in Alaska are thankfully very rare, and they're even more rare in January, that far north. That region right now has a lot of sea ice, and polar bears should be out on that ice hunting seals.
Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit more, because it seems like in past years where there hasn't been as much sea ice, and we've talked about that as the climate continues to warm year after year, that the problem for polar bears is that they need that sea ice as a platform to hunt from, right?
Right. Polar bears have evolved as what we'd call an obligate predator. They hunt other animals for the sole source of all of their calories, and they've specifically evolved for a high-fat marine mammal diet that's almost impossible to replace outside that marine environment. Those calories just don't exist on shore, especially in the Arctic. And so they're very highly refined for a very specific type of prey and a very specific source of energy that keeps them going through those long winters.
So I guess given all that, and with the understanding that this just happened on Tuesday, what do you make of all that? I mean, why would this have happened?
We just don't know right now. Details are still coming out. Key partners like the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, key partners with the state of Alaska, haven't been able to get into town. They're also being very respectful that that community is grieving and still reeling from the actual events that happened there. So we just don't know all of those details yet.
Gotcha. Yeah. What kind of things would folks heading into there trying to figure out what happened, what would they be looking at?
The team going in will look at a number of things. They'll definitely try to get their hands on the bear itself and see if there's any, you know, clear indications of the bear being in poor body condition. They'll look at the age of the bear, the health of the bear, if they can, the sex of the bear, and then they'll talk to local community members about events leading up to and during the event itself and just try to get as much information as possible. It's difficult to do in these times as people are traumatized, you know, by what happened, but it's also critically important that we get as much information from these events as possible so we can, you know, share lessons learned and share information with other communities going forward. The end goal is to, you know, try to keep people safe.
Yeah. If the sea ice is doing well right now in that area, are there reasons why polar bears might still be very hungry or might be even starving even with that?
I think that's an interesting question, and it may well become the crux of questions asked in coming months. And I think it's important to separate kind of two things. On the one hand, historically, so even going back beyond written records, polar bears have attacked and killed people, potentially for food, regardless of sea ice conditions. So linking one event to this larger environmental phenomenon that's ongoing today is always a bit risky. That being said, we know that the Chukchi Sea has experienced dramatic changes in sea ice, both sea ice extent, sea ice volume, and then how sea ice behaves during the course of the year, becoming much more dynamic, even during the winter. What we don't know is what's fully happening down the ecosystem, what changes are occurring underneath the ice, and how are those changes kind of communicating back to a species like polar bears that live on top of the ice and make their living from all of that productivity. As that entire region changes, as that lid of ice that's historically been in place for much longer periods of time and has been much more stable over those periods of time changes, you know, as to what comes next, there are a lot of questions, and changes already happened. in some cases if we're seeing it manifest itself in polar bears.
That was Polar Bears International Senior Director of Conservation Jeff York speaking with Alaska Public Media's Casey Grove. This is KTOO.